Today on The Breakdown, we have a classic hand, a breakdownable hand, a worthy hand for your ears and your mind and your skin. Because, that's right, we already went there. We've got a hand from Hustler Casino Live. It's a cash game, and it's going to be Francisco, sometimes known as The Pro, against Wesley, Crypto Apprenti. That's his Twitter handle. And they're going to play a hand that almost defies, it goes so far against a lot of the principles that we so often talk about in poker that it sort of comes around again, and maybe some of it is really highly skilled. Some of it, certainly not all of it. It is shocking. It is debilitating. It is, in some ways, a little soul-crushing, I think, for at least one of the players. One player's got a plan, executes it really beautifully, and I think we can give him a lot of points and credit for it, although I can't believe the plan worked. The other player, maybe not so much, but we'll take a look. We'll see. We'll examine. We will get into it right now on The Breakdown with Grant Dennison and Jonathan Levy.
Hey, first time, no,
I feel like this hand is a little bit like there was a trendy movie genre that was going around 2010-ish or so, where it would be surrounding an event, and then you'd see the event from like seven different perspectives. You know what I'm talking about? Like there's like an assassination.
Sure.
And you
a Rashomon type situation.
Yeah, yeah. And that was a trendy movie type for a little while. I don't think any of them got really big, but that was like,
right.
There was a few of those types.
Snake Eyes.
Yeah, those types of things.
Might have been one of them.
And I think this is a hand where it's like, it depends on what perspective you're looking at it from as far as how you're going to analyze it. Because I think one of these players could be seen as like the clearly superior player who had a plan, and it was a player-dependent plan, and it justifies everything. Or it can be seen as everybody's a spewy mess and doesn't know what the hell they're doing.
Right. I think you're right. It could be either one. But since we're playing, what are stakes are we even playing here? 100, 200, 400?
Are you telling me that the stakes mean that they're good?
Let me finish.
No! You know,
cutting me off never gets anyone anything that's worth
it. It got the audience more Grant time and less Jonathan time.
Hmm. And that's positive?
It depends on what your vantage point is.
Oh.
Featuring Dennis Quaid, I believe.
By the way, Snake Eyes starring?
Nicolas Cage.
And?
Dennis Quaid.
Ving Rhames, maybe?
Oh.
Maybe?
The Vingster.
Maybe. Not sure. It's been a long time.
Has he been allowed to be in anything but a Mission Impossible movie since 2000?
I think he signed that exclusive deal. Yeah. It's weird. Often doesn't bring anything to the table anymore.
No.
There was a while when he was a big part of it. Now it's like he sort of shows
it
up.
It just kind of looks
two
like
scenes.
It looks like a talking potato for a little while, and then it's over.
But you know, it's been good to be Ving Rhames. So
yeah, for sure.
In fairness to him,
thank you, Tom Cruise, for Ving Rhames' success.
Wow,
yeah.
That is ridiculous.
Of course,
he was around long before.
Yeah, Ving Rhames was in Pulp Fiction, of course.
Of course, he was as Marcellus Wiley.
He was good in that.
He was great in that.
Yeah,
when you get medieval on your asses, come on. Yeah. He didn't write that, but he said it.
He said it.
And the character wrote it.
This is like a meta thing. This is like adaptation.
This is a thing that happens, by the way, a lot, where actors get credit for things that writers wrote because their character said it. That happens like so often. It's a little bit of a problem for me.
Yeah. No, and it can really backfire in a negative way, you know, like with how culture evolves to new things being unacceptable. Right? Like
that's true.
So in the show Scrubs, Sarah Chalk has a line where it is certainly at this point through the lens of current society offensive to Native Americans.
Sarah Chalk, of course, is the lead female, the young blonde woman. Yeah.
Yeah, and also is the mom in Rick and Morty.
Right.
Yeah. But she has a line that I think in 2002 or whenever it came out, except for Native Americans and people very aware of what the type of thing you shouldn't say, it seemed okay.
Yeah.
And in the current lens, I've seen that. So I'm like, oh, she shouldn't have said
that.
You're
going to have to tell us what it is. You know that. It's okay. You're just reporting what
okay,
happened.
Okay, it's when there was a big debate about like how a patient should be treated.
Yeah.
And JD, who's the lead man, is like, we should wait and see. And she made I don't exactly remember what it was, but she made a joke about being part of the wait and see tribe and like did some sort of like Native American caricature move with it.
Yeah, you can't do that anymore.
No.
That's for sure.
No, it wasn't good.
No.
But at the time, it passed all of the, you know, screenwriting.
Right.
Principles of the time. I'm not justifying it. I'm just saying at the time.
No one thought there was anything wrong with it except a very small demographic.
And the bigger point is that she didn't write it. She only she performed it. But there was a moment about 3 years ago where she got a lot of shit for it.
Really?
Yeah.
That is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. How that goes down now.
Yeah.
I know, like, for example, Tina Fey pulled some of the a few episodes of 30 Rock because there's like two or three where they use blackface.
Right.
And they use it very ironically. Like, one of them is John Hamm and Tracy Morgan in like a 50s, it's supposed to be a 50s TV show. So, you know, they're very aware of what they're doing.
Yeah.
But still, she pulled it, I think, preemptively because she didn't want it to blow back. Mostly on John Hamm, I think. Probably it helps her, too.
Yeah.
But I think it was as much about protecting him as anything
else. Right, because it could be used out of context.
Right, you show a picture of John Hamm like that, that hurts him. It doesn't really hurt her in the same way, right? So, I mean, on one level, I get it. You're trying to be smart about it. On another level, it's too bad that, like, no nuance can be brought to any of this right now. That may change.
Yeah, maybe. How did we get here? Oh.
No idea.
Dennis Quaid, Vantage Point.
Vantage Point, Nicolas Cage, Snake Eyes.
Anytime I say Dennis Quaid, Vantage Point, you say Nicolas Cage, Snake Eyes. All right, let's go. Dennis Quaid, Vantage Point.
Nicolas Cage, Snake Eyes.
Great.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you know, you make a good point about this hand, and bring it all the way back.
Yeah, that's how we do it.
That if we're willing to give credit, we're going to be able to. And if we decide not to give credit, we could also decide what the fuck, right? Yeah. And that's actually true a lot of times. We're just often willing to give credit to players we know who are really good, right? Like if Jason Kude made this play, we'd feel very clear about what's going on.
We're not so sure about either of these players. And the one that we're currently like in the camp of either giving credit to or not giving credit to is much more likely to have played the hand well than the other player.
This is Wesley we're talking about. It's not a big spoiler.
Right. And Francisco, his opponent, it seems unlikely that we're going to find a path to liking his play.
I'd be shocked if we do. Let's find out. But I will say this. They call him the pro.
And they mean it. You're saying this unironically, of course.
They don't think he's a professional. But they say it. I think they say it. It's not to make fun of him or troll him necessarily. I think he likes being called the pro, and so they call him the pro.
Hmm.
And it isn't the players. It's the commentators who do it. But they know he's not a pro, and this is a hand where it's impossible for a pro. I think a pro... I mean, I guess if a pro played it like this, we'd be like, why did Justin Bonomo do this? You know, we'd spend an hour trying to figure it out.
If Justin Bonomo played the hand this way, or Michael Adamo or something, I'd be like, obviously there's something I'm not seeing here. I need to take a deeper dive into this.
But we're not going to give Francisco as much credit because I've seen him misplay a million hands. And this hand is maybe the weirdest of them all that I've seen. Maybe.
It might be pretty straightforward, actually. It really might be. I think, again, it's like, the movie Vantage Point. Don't say Snake Eyes this time. It's like the movie Vantage Point with Dennis Quaid, where it really depends on how you look at it, because it could be that it was misplayed in a complex way. It could be that it was misplayed in a very straightforward way that you see in 1-2 all the time.
Yes.
It could be that Wesley reacted in a complex, nuanced way because he knew his opponent, or it could be that Wesley was always going to make this play against everybody no matter what because he's playing 1-2 also.
I don't think he is, though, having seen him. I've seen him like... tank on the river for a while with a set, for example, in spots against Garrett when Garrett overbets the river, right?
Yeah.
So he isn't just like, well, I have a good hand, I call. You know, I mean, he's like trying to think about it and trying to decide is what should I do here? And some of his decisions are pretty quick. And I feel like he's trying to play, I believe, we'll see as we go through it, but I think he's trying to play just one level ahead of Francisco, which is all you're supposed to do, right?
Yeah.
So if Francisco's playing at a 1-2 level, Wes is like, I just got to play at a 1-3 level, baby.
Right. So disclaimer, it seems clear for Jonathan, based on what he said so far, it seems clear to me that I am likely to be giving Wesley credit throughout the hand and not giving Francisco too much credit, but I'm going to endeavor to do the opposite in both cases.
I'm going to try, especially with Francisco, to see if I can find some merit to some of this because it's so easy to dismiss some of these plays. And I think we actually are too dismissive of some of these plays,
I think the poker community at large is.
Yeah. So let's see if we can find some good stuff in it, too. Because maybe there's going to be something we can incorporate in our games, which isn't something you're used to seeing from a good player, which is going to be useful.
Right.
So let's find out. All right, let's get into it. Enough vagueness. Let's talk about the hands.
All right, it was suggested by you.
Yes, I felt we had to do it.
It's odd that none of you suggested. We've been getting quite a few suggestions currently, but nobody suggested this hand.
What the hell, people? This hand is like a definite you must talk about hand.
Maybe everybody thought it was really obvious, but it's not. It's not. All right, Wesley has $205,000 in front of him because that's a normal amount of money to play poker with. It feels it, right?
Like I mean, all these days.
Just because it's on your TV all the time, people playing with this much money, but it's like, it's absurd, right? It's just absurd.
I saw a little bit of Hustler Casino Live the other day because Chris Moneymaker was on it, so I saw a few hands, and like most people had like $20,000 in front of them, and I was like,
short stack game.
Is this even interesting?
Whereas you and I go to the club, and when we have $2,500 in front of us, we're like, I don't want to lose this $2,500.
Right, absolutely. You know? Absolutely.
That's just how it is.
Yeah.
Wesley has 205,000. He's a crypto apprentice, you know?
Yeah.
He's got 205,000 Bitcoin, probably. He opens to 1K with red aces from the hijack. It's 2.5X with a big blind ante, but whatever. We don't need to get into
what
it.
What a 1-2 play.
Not really, yeah. 1-2 is more of a 5X game, usually.
It's true. It's true. Or more.
Yeah. Francisco, which, by the way, I 5X and 1-2 when I am playing 1-2.
Okay.
Francisco has 159K and calls from the third blind with queen jack of spades. So far, so good.
It's impossible to critique either of these players for these plays so far.
How frequently do you think Francisco should 3-bet this hand in this spot? Just curious.
Well, let's see. How deep are we really? We're relatively deep. So that gives us a little bit more room to do it. Wesley's opening from the hijack. So it's not very early position anyway, right? With the third blind, it's a little bit earlier.
It's basically the low jack.
Yeah. I think we should do it a tiny bit, maybe 10 to 15% of the time, mostly call.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah, probably. It's nice to have hands like this in your three betting range, though.
Exactly.
Even out of the big blind.
You can't be so obvious that you only have like ace, king, kings, jacks, tens, whatever, the big stuff, and then like a few ace five suiteds. Like, we want to cover things a little better than that. So just a little bit of this kind of a hand and other suited connectors once in a while make you much harder to play against, especially when you're deep.
Calling is certainly the most comfortable way to play the hand.
Yeah, and very reasonable, of course, too. And like, again, we should do it almost always.
The pot is $2,500 US dollars. I think they're US dollars.
You don't know that?
They might be hustler bucks, and, you know, Prahlad Friedman's right all along. The flop, well, you know, where he's saying it's all fake.
Oh, right. He is saying that these days.
Yeah.
Okay. He might be right. The flop.
Queen of clubs, seven of diamonds, three of hearts. Almost as dry as you can get.
Yeah, I mean, there's a few gut shots, and that's it. There's 4-5 and 5-6. Those are your gut shots, ladies and gentlemen. I guess 4-6. Those are your three gut shots.
King 7 deuce rainbow is the driest, right? So this is pretty close. Queen 7 3 rainbow.
Queen 7 deuce also super dry. Yeah. Those are just as dry.
Yeah.
Same level.
I suppose you're right.
The deuce means there's no straight draws.
Right. All right, so Francisco has flopped top pair, usually ahead. Not this time.
But usually ahead.
Wesley has aces.
Yeah.
Francisco checks.
Sure.
What is the size you use here most of the time? Heads up with aces.
And we have like, what, 2,400, 2,600 in the pot, something like that?
25.
On a board this dry, we just don't have to bet much at all.
We don't. But let's assume for a second that we think Francisco is terrible.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
So how much should we bet then? Okay, we should size up for sure to get maximum value out of anything that decides to not fold.
Yeah.
Because if we can get... I mean, I assume any pair is going to call us once, right?
Yeah. I mean, for years and years, 10 years minimum, when I was playing live poker tournaments, small stakes live poker tournaments for a living, a lot of the ways that I would win those tournaments was simply to bet big when I had it and bet small when I didn't have it against the players that I knew would not
notice
the difference.
Yeah, wow. Yeah. Incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
So if you have an opponent like that, go for it.
Yes.
You know?
Absolutely, go for it.
I'm not saying Francisco's that guy. I'm not saying that.
He might be.
But he might be. I don't know.
Okay, well, if we think Francisco is a massive station and is going to be insensitive to price, let me put it that way instead. So essentially, a small bet and a big bet are the same, and he's not going to have, he's going to have like memento level recall on this, so that way, the next time we play a hand against him, if we bet small, he isn't going to think, wait a second, last time he had aces.
That sounds like a compliment if you don't really contextualize it well. Memento level recall.
Oh, it does sound like it, and yet it's very much not.
Yeah.
Right? You can only remember the last 15 minutes or so. If we think he's not going to be able to retain that, now that's probably unfair to him.
Yeah.
Like, I assume he is going to be able to retain
that. I think so.
So then we should probably be balanced and probably bet a normal amount that we would normally bet in this spot rather than size it up.
Unless we really know, you know.
We really know what?
Like, that Francisco is definitely price insensitive and, doesn't really change his value of hands based on anything.
But he's also not going to read into our hand strength based on size.
Yeah.
That's really important, right?
Yeah.
Because it isn't so important for this time, although it matters for this time too because we're strong. But for all the times we're weak and we see bet, if he can tell we're weak, that's deadly, right?
Yeah.
That's the end of the world. So I don't think it's fair to say he wouldn't understand that.
I think ultimately the best way to put it is when in doubt, balance.
Great.
So, but there are, you know, edge cases. There was a particular player that was a regular in the tournaments that I used to play on a daily basis who I ultimately decided, this could be debatable, that anytime I was in the big blind and he raised, I was calling with 100% of my hands because every single line was bet, shove. Mm. 100% of lines.
Yeah.
So it was just then a simple distribution game and I, you know, often stacked this guy. Right? Yeah. So, I mean, obviously at a certain stack depth, I stopped doing that. But like when we're 50 blinds deep or deeper, it's definitely like, yeah, he raised to 4X. I'm calling with Jack 5 off.
Right.
100%.
Right.
Like I have to.
Of course.
You know, so there are edge cases like that.
No question. No question. But that's but that case, by the way, is the opposite, right? You're talking about your calling range versus your how much you're betting.
Right. It is.
But still, of course, there are people who are going to be way, way, way far down the spectrum or on one side of the pendulum or the other. I don't think Francisco's that far down.
I do not. I don't
know. So let's not act like he is.
No, let's not. I was just trying to, you know, I'm trying to set the stage based on what we were talking about earlier about Wesley, you know, playing based on his perceptions of his opponent.
I think if it were me and there's like 2,600 in the pot, 2,500 in the pot on Queen 7-3 rainbow, I would bet like $800.
Yeah,
mostly.
Me too.
Yeah.
Wesley bets 1K. That's not that different.
That's totally the same.
Let's start getting weird.
Great.
Francisco is going to raise to 3K.
Yeah.
Which I think with on its face is an interesting play. You know, this is the type of play that in 2015, every good player in the world would say is terrible.
But in 2010, every good player would say, of course you raise on that board.
And in 2023, every good player would say you mix, you know? I don't know if Francisco's mixing. He might just raise top pair with Ubiquity in heads up pots.
Well, I mean, I think the really important question here is, do you have bluffs? Because this is such a dry board that this is a reason not to raise so much is you have so few bluffs, right?
Well, it's pretty easy to construct bluffs if you want to.
I mean, you come up with a few gutters, or you just decide anything else. Of course, you can have bluffs, but do you?
Right.
If you just don't have many bluffs, then this hand's too weak to raise because you're going to have stronger hands you can raise than this.
Well,
right?
The issue with the board being dry is that it's hard to have that strong of a hand.
Right, but like, for example, Francisco can have pocket threes or pocket sevens, queen seven suited, queen three suited, 7-3 suited. Those are all stronger hands.
Yeah.
Some of those don't even block top pair. That's cool, too. Those are all hands you'd rather be raising, I think.
Well, sure.
Than queen jack.
Yeah, but if Wesley's frequencies are out of whack, then maybe it becomes okay to raise this hand.
If you're saying if he's c-betting, I mean, this is a board I assume Wesley's going to c-bet a huge amount of the
time. Of course, you might lose out on future value if you raise and Wesley has nothing.
This is the biggest piece, right? It isn't just about this street, right? It's about the whole entirety of the hand and how much value we can get or not get and what's the path that's going to get us the most value. And of course, the answer is there's never one path, like you're saying. We have to have some balance. We have to mix to some degree. But mostly, check raising this hand on this kind of a super dry board, I think, is not a path to maximum value.
Here's how I would think. This is my first stab at a good way to do this with queen jack in this exact scenario. On queen 7-3 with a diamond and a heart as the other cards, we call with, because we have all of the queen jacks, right? We have all 16 preflop combos of queen jack.
100%.
So we have 12 remaining combos. We could, if we want to check raise this hand, just do it when you have the backdoor flush draw with it. And then you're only doing 2 out of your 12 combos, and that seems fine.
Wouldn't it be 3 out of your 12 combos?
No, because the queen...
Oh, the queen would block it. You're right, of course. That makes it a lot better right away. That cuts it down tremendously. It makes you much harder to play. It's going to be like, you almost never do it, but you do it a little bit.
Yeah.
And so if they get too hero call-y, because like, what do you really have for value here? Because you're...
Yeah.
Cool. Now you punish them for that.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, a lot of this also comes back to how much of a station is your opponent, right? If your opponent's not much of a station, they're going to fold to all your check raises. You shouldn't be check raising this hand.
Yeah.
Right? If they're a station to you, you should check raise this hand a lot. So all these things matter too.
Right. But I think if we're living in theory land, maybe my way might be an okay place to start.
Sure. I agree.
But
I agree.
In practical land, it's probably better just to call most of the time because you don't want to miss out on future value. You don't want to put yourself in a game theory disaster situation. Now, Wesley's going to have some weaker queens that he's going to be forced to call with. He might even call with some sevens and some pocket pairs.
I think he's going to call with every pocket pair over a seven, like once. We're deep. I think he's going to like see what develops, essentially, partially because we don't have that much value.
Yeah. So I think, you know, if this is what Francisco does 100% of the time with top pair on this board, that's problematic. But if he just does it sometimes, it's fine.
I agree. And I think it's interesting and it's important. One of the things you and I think, not so much in theory, but in practice, our raises on flops are too polarized.
Yeah.
And it's easier to play when your raises are polarized. But I think like the more new, now you don't have to do this against really good competition too, like against bad competition.
It doesn't matter.
It's better to be polarized.
Just play ABC against the bad competition.
Right. It's fine to be polarized. And mostly we're not playing against the top players in the world here. Mostly.
I mean, when I do play against the good players in our player pool, I do more. I have a much wider raising range on flops and turns and rivers.
I do all sorts of things differently against them for the same reason, right? Because I don't want it to be easy for them. But ultimately, yeah, it comes back to who's our opponent, right? So, but in theory, land, if we're just living there, yes, we should raise this a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think backdoor flush draw is a great way to do it.
Yep. So this is where the real fun begins, where we start wondering if Wesley really has a true read on Francisco and an understanding of who he is as a poker player. Because Wesley, with two red aces on queen 7-3 rainbow, three bets.
Yeah.
He three bets.
Yeah.
To 9K. And my initial thought, of course, because this is a poker theory podcast, goes to theory land, which is ace-queen is such a better raise than this hand. It's such a better raise than this hand. But
because you bought queen 7, queen 3?
Yep. From theory land. But if Francisco's raising top pair all the time, then this hand becomes a better raise.
Right, because then you don't block all the top pairs. That's a great point.
Yeah, so it's that. This is the vantage point, man. Dennis Quaid, 2008.
Snake eyes. Here's another thing, too, and I think we're going to get more information on this as we go along the hand, but I want to at least open this door now, too, to give Wesley a little less credit.
Okay.
Or maybe you wouldn't even call this less credit, but it's possible he's putting in this raise right now on this dry a board thinking, if I get four bet, I can comfortably fold against this opponent.
Like, and you know what? He might be right.
Right. No. Yeah. So he may be actually raising for value slash information as well, where he's like, a four bet I can fold. If I just get called, I'm usually good here.
If we give Wesley the most credit we possibly can, we can say this is a perfect play.
Right.
And that we're getting called by all of the top pairs that Francisco overvalues constantly. And if Francisco four bets, which he will do with two pair plus, we know we're behind and we can fold.
I mean, we do give up some equity in our folding, but not a huge amount.
Yeah, because two pair blocks a lot of our...
We have, five outs.
Yeah.
Then we pick up some more usually on the
turn. So if we're giving Wesley ultimate credit, that's what we would
say. It's possible he's doing that.
It's possible. It's also possible that it's just step one of Francisco overvalues top pair, and I want to get maximum value from top pair.
It's hard to know. But again, it could be both also. It could be, I want to get maximum value from top pair. Here's how I do it. And if he four-bets me, he never just has top pair.
Yeah.
In a million years, he never has it. And so I can fold. And because we're deep enough, this way I actually save $100,000.
Yeah.
Like every time he has me crushed here. Every time he has a set of sevens.
For maximum credit, that would be really cool.
That would be really, really cool. Unknown.
What is known is Francisco is now facing a 3-bet to 9K.
Yes.
Should we just bag it now? I mean, it's a lot different than a Jack 10-9 board where we check raised ace jack, right?
Yes, it is.
And with like two hearts on it, right? Where we can actually be ahead of some things that feel really good about the board.
I mean, Wesley basically has to just be straight bluffing with nothing going on. I guess he could have like four or five of hearts.
Yeah.
Like the gut shot and the back door and raise, but... I don't know, man. Is he really doing that? Probably not very often.
Probably not too often. Not if you think Francisco's going to call with top pair.
Now, maybe for Francisco, we sit here and think, what is Wesley's value range? We probably wouldn't include a hand like aces when he three bets, right?
No.
Because I'm surprised he's three betting
aces. We think sets of sevens and threes are the most obvious.
Right, because we block queens.
Yeah.
There's one set of queens left. There's no two pair combos for Wesley, you would think.
Maybe
anyway.
Queen seven suited?
Unlikely with three blinds if coming from the hijack. Really, I mean, possible, I guess, but... That's a little... I don't think he's that crazy.
I don't know if queen seven suited is actually possible from Francisco's perspective.
Why?
Because
of the...
queen seven of hearts.
Okay, so there's just one combo anyway. Yeah. So I don't think we have to worry about that at all. So really, we're just looking at sets only when Wesley puts in the three bet, and we block top set pretty hard. So there's only seven combos of value that's beating us, we might think. But actually, if Wesley's got aces, that means he has kings. That means he probably has ace-queen also. There's a crazy amount of value
that's
beating us. A cacrillion.
Sounded like, what was that where you were going?
I wish I had said that.
Yeah. It's a new number.
It's a cool number.
It's a sick number. So I think on this drive aboard, unless we know something about Wesley and his desire to way over bluff, we can just bag it now and get rid of the hand.
Yeah.
Like, this adventure was fun. Let's just go move on.
It's so weird to check raise a value hand, like top pair, and then throw it away to the re-raise.
Well, this is why a lot of people would never, ever check raise this hand on this board, and why in 2015, none of the good players did.
And let's be clear. Like, so Francisco's not going to fold. Like,
no.
This is not a surprise. We got a whole breakdown to do here. So Francisco's going to end up calling, which means he's going to put in more or less the same amount of money on the flop that he could have put in on the whole hand if he just went check call, give or take.
Yeah.
Right? So, like, this is another reason why not reopening the action has a lot of value, right? You can really limit your losses here.
Yep.
And you also give your opponent chances to blast off. Now, maybe Francisco thinks by raising, he's giving his opponent a chance to blast off, too. And In this case, we see that's not necessarily true, but it could be true, I guess.
It could be true. I don't know.
Maybe.
I mean, assuming that Francisco played this hand in the more standard way and went check call, the bet on the river might have been the size of Wesley's three bet on the flop. You know,
right.
really huge difference. And I think there might be a really important thing hidden here in what Francisco does when he calls.
Oh.
And it might really play into the rest of the hand.
Tell me.
He calls and then he checks dark immediately.
Mm.
That could really be telling Wesley something.
What do you think it's telling Wesley? What do you think that message is?
The message is I'm in check call mode and yeah. I don't have that strong of a hand.
Yeah.
Like, I don't believe you. And
right.
my quick dark check is to say, like, if you want to bet, go for it, buddy.
Right.
But I'm going to go ahead and keep on keeping on.
It does feel like there's some sort of like he's trying to slow Wesley down a tiny bit with that, right?
Yeah. Do you think there's any value in the dark check ever? We've visited this on the podcast in the past, but I don't know.
Not too much anyway. I mean, look, it'd be interesting if he sends that message and then sends a conflicting message a little later on. That could mess with Wesley's yeah. head. But that's the only value it can come up with here. I don't know why we'd ever turn down our ability to bet here. Like, what if the queen pairs? Are we just going to let it go check, check?
Yep.
Is that the plan?
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, it's okay for it to go check, check, but do we want it to, and are we sure we want it to when we dark check? Because if we're not sure, what if a queen or jack comes? Are we sure we don't want to bet?
Right.
Especially a queen, though, because a queen might really freeze Wesley if he has a hand like, say, aces or kings. But if he has value, the value's all beating us anyway. The value, though, I'm assuming, as Francisco is thinking of, right?
Yeah.
Which is better than aces. It's full houses and whatever.
Yeah.
So that should all be crushed. That shouldn't actually matter if the queen pairs. Really. So maybe it's okay to dark check for that reason.
Maybe.
But why?
You don't
why give away any information?
You don't want to give up your option.
Right.
It actually reminds me of a hand. I just was in Vegas for a bit and I played a hand in 2-5 at Aria where a guy who I had a pretty good beat on for a second, he opened and seemed pretty strong. He opened bigger than he normally does and mm-hmm. he's kind of an obvious player. And I called out the big blind with Jack 10 and the flop came Jack low, rainbow. And he bet pot, and I was like, I'm losing like all the time, but yeah. I called. And the turn was a jack.
You called specifically because you know if you hit something, you can get a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Turn is a jack.
Turn is a jack, and I just lead for a pot and a half.
Right.
Because I'm like, this guy's going to check an overpair.
Right. Of course he is.
And he's going to call with an overpair. So right. I went pot and a half, and got called both times. And
wow.
he's like, you got super lucky and showed aces, you know?
And you're like, well, I mean, I did, but yeah. I wasn't going to put any more money in on after the turn anyway. You didn't say that, obviously.
Yeah. Of course not. So you do give up a lot by checking dark. Like, it would have gone check on the turn in that hand.
Right.
You know?
Right. Now, again, maybe because there was a three bet on the flop, Francisco would never be betting even if the queen pairs.
Maybe.
That's reasonable.
Maybe.
Right. But still, why give it up? Why tell Wesley you're giving up your option? There's just not a lot there to do. So I think I'm with you.
Okay. Good. I mean, it's the Helmuth move, right? The dark check.
Yes.
Does he still do that?
I don't know. I haven't seen him do it in a while, but I don't really watch him play anymore. Because he's so boring to watch.
He doesn't necessarily let the fireworks fly.
Well said. I mean, that's what I was going to say, but you said it better.
But the fireworks do fly on Nitro Betting.
There it is.
Nitro Betting, where fireworks fly. Unless it's restricted by the area and you don't want to like offend the dogs and stuff. It's you don't want to mess with fireworks too much. Honestly, Nitro Betting, not a fan of fireworks.
Nitro Betting, do not use fireworks ever. Stop,
shut up with the fireworks. Nitro Betting.
Where eagles fly.
The eagles fly, herons fish in secret groves.
Caw-caw! Caw-caw!
That's the Nitro Betting ring-a-ling-ding caw-caw sound.
Yep.
Which means use the link in the description when you sign up for Nitro Betting to get access to all of our coolest stuff,
which is
the Poker Guys Monthly Tournament. You don't get access to it unless you use that link.
Yep.
All sorts of promotions that happen for only our people.
Yep.
And, you know, sports betting promotions such as survivor pools for the NFL, college basketball betting, NBA betting, all sorts of betting.
You got which it, is Haas. What
it's called Nitro Betting. So
there's betting.
There's betting. There's also casino
always,
games.
Always betting.
It's a good idea to do that before you die.
You know, I'm going to say this too. If you want to get your action on, if you want to get some feelings happening in your life, this is the place to go, man. You got to get some action on. You know, get those feelings.
Wow.
I feel like I'm trapped in a Jim Robinson.
Did you go to advertising school?
I really feel like I'm in a I think you should leave sketch.
I wish you were in a I think you should leave sketch.
I wish I was.
A fantastic show.
Yeah.
Did you go to the shirt store recently?
Oh, yeah, get one of those. I can't remember the name of them right now.
Yeah, I can't either. This is a $400 shirt because the patterns are so complicated.
Oh, Grant loves that show so much.
It's a very good show. It's among my favorite comedy sketch shows of all time. Anyway, Nitro Betting. There is no Tim Robinson sketch show available on that site, I don't think. But there is poker. There is sports betting. There are casino games. And if you use the link, you get a lot of cool stuff.
And unlike every other sports betting site where you got to upload money into an account, they hold it, you have to hope they pay you back. This is all decentralized, baby. It's all Bitcoin. So you put that money in there, you get it back whenever you want it. You just fucking do it.
Yeah,
it comes to you.
Yeah, 90 minutes.
90 minutes. Ka-ka, motherfucker.
Yeah, it's like that. Wow. This is a standard ad. I think our next ad will be for Casper Mattresses, and Jonathan will use the same language. Anyway, moving along in the hand that we are currently playing, the flop was Queen of Clubs, Seven of Diamonds, Three of Hearts. Francisco has Queen Jack of Spades for top pair. Wesley has two red aces.
Yeah.
Somehow it got check raised and three bet by Wesley, and then called and dark checked by Francisco.
Sure.
So there's $20,500 in the pot, and the turn is the Nine of Clubs.
Not too bad.
So it brings some draws, but those are unlikely based on the flop action.
I mean, yeah, it brings some like nothing that beats you except Queen Nine, which Francisco had to play this way, right?
Right.
Which is unlikely, I guess possible, but unlikely. We shouldn't be too worried about Queen Nine.
From Wesley's perspective, sure. Yeah. Should Francisco be worried about this nine at all?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't know why he'd ever be worried about this nine.
Right. So even though it makes the board much wetter, in that there's now combo draws available and stuff. Those combo draws exist in Wesley's hand some of the time, pretty much never in Francisco's hand.
Yep.
Right?
That's right.
But it's extremely rare, right, that Wesley has King 10 of clubs.
It feels really unlikely that he would put in the three.
But if you're going to generate a bluffing range, that's the type of hand you would want to put
in. Yeah, and then this card would be a dream card on the turn.
Right. So there is some of that, sure. I guess maybe it makes it a slightly more likely that Wesley could be bluffing if he continues.
I guess. I don't know that Wesley's got a lot of those plays in him necessarily. Yeah. That's a very high-end play.
Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Nine of clubs. Francisco has already checked in the dark.
Okay. I guess, Wesley, you just got to bet your aces now, right?
Yeah, you're just like, I hope Francisco has a queen, and I hope he keeps calling me.
Right. We're the guy who decided to three-bet the flop because we believed we had the best hand, and we were going to know if we didn't because Francisco was going to four-bet us. He didn't four-bet us. So, yeah, we bet. That's it.
Wesley goes pretty big.
Yeah.
He bet $16,000 into $20,500.
Pretty normal these days. That's what people do, man. They bet big on the turn.
And if Francisco is going to be at all price insensitive with top pair, I like it.
Yep. I agree.
Do you want to get crazy again?
You want to get crazy? Let's get crazy.
Is that from Snake Eyes? It sounds like it should be from Snake Eyes.
It's from every Nicolas Cage movie.
Yeah, yeah.
So yes, it's from Snake Eyes.
Cool. What part of Matchstick Men is that in?
It's the part where Sam Rockwell tricks him.
Oh, that part. Yeah. Yeah, so the whole movie. Anyway, Francisco raises to $39,000.
Right. So remember that whole dark check?
Yeah.
It shows that you're just calling.
We tricked you.
Guess what? It's a confusing thing now that happened.
You got bluffed.
So now it really feels like fucking Francisco's got a monster, doesn't it?
Before we go to that,
okay,
because we don't want to play this hand only from Wesley's
perspective. You're right. Let's do it from Francisco. What the fuck is he doing?
Why did he do this?
I have no idea at all. It seems awful.
Wesley could easily have a set as played, of course.
Let me ask you this one, Sherlock. What hands are continuing against this check raise? What hands? Is Queen 10 continuing?
No.
So what the fuck are we doing?
Yeah,
so we can get no value with this check raise. I guess we can shut out.
I mean, maybe Queen 10 is continuing. I don't know. Maybe.
I guess maybe, but it seems unlikely,
If Wesley really expands his Francisco always calls down plan.
Maybe.
Then maybe Queen 10 is
maybe we can get value out of Queen 10. Guess what? Queen 9 just leaped ahead of us.
Yeah.
It's hard to believe Wesley has very many Queen 8s in his range. So it's all better. Maybe Queen 10 is the only hand in the world you could at least configure something in your brain that like maybe it could continue that you're actually beating. But I think every other hand in the world that continues is beating us.
Yeah.
Great.
So this
seems like a bad check raise.
This seems like a bad check raise because it would seem that the main purpose is equity denial. But before this check raise happened, we outlined how it is so unlikely for somebody to have a draw.
Right.
Right? Like Wesley doesn't have too much ace king of clubs in his range.
He really doesn't.
As played. So it's not like you really need to defend against the draws. You're really just hoping an ace or a king doesn't come at this point. So you're putting Wesley in ace king because certain levels of players put everybody on ace king in every hand.
Right, even though they three bet you on the flop.
Yeah. So maybe that's what's going on.
Maybe.
I don't know. It's going to be very hard for me to find a defense of this check raise.
I mean, we're really targeting like ace king of clubs, which made the cool. I've got backdoors and overs play on the flop, and then turn the nine of clubs. So we're actually not denying equity, but we're charging the equity in this case, right?
Yeah,
but that's fine.
Yeah, I don't know if we're telling a very believable story to hands like Wesley's either, because we checked dark. And we
when we put in the check raise though, I think a set of sevens isn't crazy at all.
I guess.
Like he check raised to 39,000. Yeah. Like so now it looks like, oh, I'm gonna seem weak and now fuck you, I got you. You fell into my trap, sucker.
Yeah, okay. Giving Francisco a lot of credit, which with his hand, I don't like what he's doing.
Yeah.
But if we're giving him a lot of credit, it could be a tricky play with even a two pair type hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like if he had queen nine.
Which, I guess he would play queen nine this way, probably.
The problem is, again, it's hard to come up with hands that Wesley's going to three bet on the flop that queen nine is actually ahead of right now that at least continue against our check raise when we have queen nine. It's really, really hard to come up with anything except maybe ace king of clubs.
Although,
king ten of clubs.
Here's a fun little thing that happens, though.
Yeah.
From Wesley's perspective, when Francisco takes this line after checking dark, queen nine becomes the most likely hand.
I agree.
So
I agree.
That's pretty interesting.
Yep.
Well, should we just fold as Wesley? Like, we don't like how Francisco played this hand, but guess what? It might just get aces to fold.
Well, let's look at the implied odds piece for a second, okay? So it's, we bet 16, he made it 39, right?
Yeah.
So it's 23,000 more. Mm-hmm. If we call this, the pot's going to have about 100 in it, and then Francisco has another 110 back. So let's assume there's like 185,000 to win if we put in this 25.
Okay.
Even if we're behind a queen nine, you know, we can spike an ace, a seven, or a three.
That's eight outs. 16%.
Okay. We're getting the right price to call if we think we can get paid.
Yeah.
If we can get paid. I don't know if we can get paid, but that's eight only, outs is a lot of outs.
But that's under the assumption that queen nine is Francisco's only hand.
Of course it isn't, right? Yeah. That's true. It looks like the most obvious one.
Right, but Francisco could be getting tricky and have a set.
Right.
And then 100%. Then we have two outs. And
I'd be very concerned about pocket sevens here if I were Wesley.
I would too.
Especially we did the whole thing of maybe I three bet the flop, and if I get four bet, I can fold because he's never going to blow. And now I just got check raised on the fucking turn. It feels like I'm behind all the time.
So the plan is to call no matter what, or is the plan to call and then fold if the board doesn't pair? Like, I don't know.
I mean, it really comes down to, and I hate to say it this way, but how bad do we think Francisco is, right? Do we think Francisco can really have just top pair here? If we think that, I guess the plan is to never fold and hope we're not in the bad part of his range. We're hoping the good part where we're beating him, right? That's all I got. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I think it's...
You just got to suck it up, basically.
I have not seen enough Francisco to know how to assess this check raise. I can make a lot of assumptions based on this hand, but they are likely to be incorrect because it's such a small sample size.
Yeah.
Wesley plays with Francisco a lot, is my guess. So he has some sort of a player profile in his head on Francisco, and maybe because Wesley ends up calling.
Yep.
So his player profile of Francisco is he's actually going to play hands like top pair like this. He's actually going to do that. I have to call. I'm behind sometimes, but he also has some hands that I'm beating that don't make that much sense.
Even like some of the crazier guys we play cash with, who we really look to, who we get a lot of value out of, the guys who overvalue their hands and just make crazy plays at us. You know some of the guys I'm talking about. If they take this line, we three bet them on the flop, they check raise the turn after checking dark.
Yeah.
They almost always have it.
Oh, yeah. I'm scared of that line.
I probably am folding aces here without really thinking much of it.
Yeah.
And thinking, like, you blew it, buddy. Like, you didn't have to play it like that. Like, just lead the turn or something. Like, you're going to get more money that way. Like, what are you doing? You know? So, I don't know. This can't feel great as Wesley when you get check raised here, right? Because there are a lot of things that are beating you.
Right. Even if Francisco is the type of guy who will do this with top pair, which obviously he is, and Wesley's aware of it, he's still also going to have hands that beat Wesley.
Of course he is.
Right?
Unless Wesley thinks that Francisco slow plays his monsters and strong hands on the flop, like a huge amount, especially on that dry a board.
Yeah, this is where the game tree explodes.
Yeah.
It's just on fire. I don't really know what to do with it.
Yeah, I mean, if we think Francisco is a slow player, and I think he at least often is, probably not always, but often is, especially on a board that dry, then maybe we can start to think like, well, he doesn't have that many strong hands again. But yeah, like you're saying, it's all in pieces around us. Tatters.
So Wesley calls, and that's what we know.
Okay. Okay.
The pot is $98,500. Queen of clubs, seven of diamonds, three of hearts, nine of clubs, Francisco has queen, jack of spades. Wesley has two red aces. The river pairs the seven with a spade. So no club comes in, the seven pairs.
You know what this is? You know what they say in Ireland about this card?
Ireblarney.
Close. They say it's a crackerjack seven. It's because it's so good for Wesley. It's an amazingly good card. It's kind of a, it's almost like the best card that isn't an ace in the deck, I would say, is essentially this card. A three is the same.
Yeah.
A non-club three is the same, right? But it cuts down on the combos of value that are beating us in terms of like that were already beating us.
Right.
And it kills queen nine if it was beating us too.
Yeah.
Like what an incredible thing. Like we're beating so much more than we were beating a second ago with that seven.
Right. So alarm bells must be going off in Francisco's head now, right? Like
we just got called. Our $39,000 check raise just got called. Yeah. We should be losing to everything.
Because
except ace king of clubs or something.
Right. So the type of hand that we are still beating is ace X of clubs and club combo draws.
King X of clubs, whatever, yeah.
That don't really feel like they're there that often, but if Wesley's gonna have three bet bluffs on the flop that continue on the turn, those are the hands,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So the optimal play against those hands is to check.
There's only one play here, and it's to check, right? If we were to bet any amount, it's hard to imagine getting called by worse hands at this point. Unless we think Wesley's gonna station us with queen 10, but actually the problem is even if we think that, the range of hands that he's calling with, queen 10 is probably the bottom of the range, right?
Yeah, so and it's probably not help it's us. Really probably not even there.
No, I don't think it is. Yeah. But even if we thought it was, we list all the hands he's calling with us on the river. That's the worst one. Everything else is beating us. We can't bet.
All right. So
there's no betting. Clearly.
Hold on a second.
What?
Hold on a second.
Okay. Okay.
What? Now, that's level one.
Yes.
Which is where you live, Jonathan.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. Down in the muck. So
with the
muck creatures, which are unnamed because Darwin didn't even decide they were worth naming.
Yeah, I see them, but I will not give them the privilege of a name.
Yeah. Anyway, so sure, we can imagine that Wesley's made hands have us beat, and when he had a hand that didn't beat us on the turn that decided to continue to the river, it is never calling a bet,
right?
But then the next question is, can we get some of the made hands that have us beat to fold? Is it worth taking a shot at that?
Cool question.
Because I don't know what we were playing for on the turn. On the flop, I think we were raising for some version of value and equity denial.
Yeah.
Combined. On the turn, it's not clear what the spectrum is there. If we bet now, it's got to be a bluff.
But what are we trying to bluff out?
Well, this is where we reverse roles, and we have to say Francisco knows a lot about Wesley and knows he's capable of three betting over pairs and ace queen here. So he got here. It's just in case against the clubs. They'll fold anyway. I'll win the pot anyway. I miss out on maybe if he was going to bluff, but he might not bluff against this line anyway. So I got to give myself a shot to fold out the marginally better hands
like
that beat me.
Kings and aces and ace queen.
Yeah. That's the giving Francisco maximum credit.
The problem with that is it's so counter to how we got here.
It doesn't matter. We're here now.
It does matter because if we thought the reason why we were able to call the three bet on the flop is because we think Wesley's capable of, we're not giving him so much value, right?
I'm not saying it's all going to match up perfectly.
Don't go trying to draw diagrams about time travel right now.
Cognitive perspective.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is once we're here.
Okay.
It's a reasonable thought if we have a bead on Wesley and the type of player that he is and the types of hands he can show up with, as we see as the viewer, he can show up with aces here.
Yes.
To consider bluffing as an option.
Okay. We did check raise the turn and he did just call.
Yeah.
So maybe he doesn't have that much hand. Like, it's hard for him to have queen. We have a queen in our hand anyway, right?
Sets might just pounce on the turn once the bet comes in.
They might. They might not because it's a pretty safe board to just call and be in position.
Yeah.
Like, I think I would just call.
Yeah.
When this nine of clubs comes after the flop action, there's just nothing to be afraid of, right?
Yeah.
I think I like that you're trying to go there. I appreciate that you're trying to go there. I don't think it's really reasonable to get there though.
Yeah, but if Michael Adamo did it,
we would really work hard to try and figure it out. But it doesn't mean we would end up saying this is a good play and we understand why it happened, right? We might, and in fact, we often get to a place with him or Jason Kuhn where we're like, we don't get it. It seems bad to us. That doesn't mean it is bad.
Yeah.
That's where we end, right? So I'm definitely the best I could ever say about this is I don't get it. It seems bad to me.
Well, and what this is Francisco does bet.
Yeah.
And he bets all of it, which is 110K into 98.5.
So maybe it's a bluff because what else could it fucking be is your point. Right.
And maybe if you're going to bluff, this is the best size to choose.
Fair enough.
We're targeting a pretty strong range.
If we're trying to fold out ace-queen plus,
yeah,
and it really is just ace-queen, kings, and aces.
Yeah, because we're not folding out a full house.
No chance. 0%.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, okay. This size might work, I guess. Might get it done. If Wesley has aces, which he does, this is not an easy call, right?
No.
I mean, the problem is he called the turn. So once he calls the turn with those hands, you're giving... I'm not saying he's always going to call the river, but he's calling a lot more on the river. He's like, it's kind of an inflection point in the hand. The turn, check, raise, call, isn't it? With those hands?
Yeah. And of course, there are major problems with this, even if sometimes you do feel like you need to bluff because you feel like you have the worst hand.
Yeah.
You don't have to bluff every time you have the worst hand and you think you don't have the worst hand, by the way. It's not always necessary.
What else?
Wesley never slowed down except for to just call the turn, which is not really slowing down that much.
With pot size bet back. In yeah. position on a unscary board.
So he's uncapped in my mind. He could have quads. He could have queens full.
I think he'd absolutely have both those hands.
Yeah, so that's a reason not to do it.
Yep.
Francisco does, and Wesley takes 0 seconds and calls.
Wesley calls, like, literally in less than a second for 110,000 into 98
yeah.
with fucking aces. That's how clear he is about Francisco's game.
Right. So if we're giving Wesley maximum credit,
right.
this was all a player-dependent thing. And then on the turn, he was a little bit worried about queen nine, and then he got a seven or a three or an ace.
He's like, what
and
a
he's
dream.
He's like, oh, now it's easy.
Yeah. It's like, I was really hoping, I would have preferred an ace, but I was really hoping for a seven or a three also. That's yeah. incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it
so
is.
It's one of the better cards in the deck, and he had a plan, and he followed through, and Jonathan loves that.
Yeah, I really do. I'm curious if it was a six instead of a seven if he calls the river, or if he calls quickly. Like, what happens, basically? He probably calls, but it's not as clear, right?
It's not as obvious, no.
Yeah. And then maybe we're saying all this stuff about Francisco bluffing, but like the bluff maybe works against, you know, the non-great cards for Wesley. The problem is, if you're putting Wesley on a hand like aces, kings, or ace-queen, this should be pretty obvious that this is a good card for him.
Yeah.
Now, again, you have to be thinking about all that stuff, but like,
it's not
clearly
as good,
that's a good
it's
card
It's not as
for
good
him.
For ace-queen as aces and kings.
Queens that's and true. Nines beats that's ace. True. That's ace a good point.
Still.
It still kills two combos of value.
Yeah.
But it's not, but it still is way. That's true. Ace queen. Ace queen's. I mean, I guess ace queen's just as likely as aces or kings from yeah. Wesley's point of view. He should probably play them the same, right? Most of the time.
Yeah. Anyway, that's how Wesley won a 300K pot.
Unbelievable. This should have been Wesley bets 1,000, Francisco calls most of the time,
yeah.
right? Turn.
Wesley bets 4,500.
Francisco calls. River. Wesley overbets to 22,000. Francisco thinks forever and finally calls yeah. and loses, you know, 30,000 in the hand yeah. instead of 160.
Yeah.
That's what's supposed to happen most of the time.
And this hand, assuming that we're in the world where Wesley had a plan, mm-hmm. is the superior player
yeah.
and knows Francisco very well, this is a great example of how in most games in the world, the most profitable strategy is not GTO.
Right.
It's finding exploits that are seemingly very likely to be correct, based on correct assumptions, based on a large sample size with a player that you think has inferior tendencies.
Now, you're saying that as if the GTO line wouldn't be Wesley's line, but we don't actually know
that's
that.
True.
Like, it's possible this really would be a fair amount of GTO lines.
That's actually true. That's
like
actually
true. The 3-8 on the flop is something we wouldn't do, but GTO might do that a
you're
little
right.
bit more. I think the GTO calls a lot of turn check raises and probably calls the river when that 7 comes.
It just feels exploitative.
It feels very... Well, the speed at which he does it is yeah. part of it, right?
Yeah.
It feels like he's... This is my guy, right? And the thing is, I mentioned this thing with Garrett before. I didn't want to give away too much about that hand because I didn't want to give away too much about this hand. But on that hand, I think Wesley had a set of 5s. Garrett had a set of 4s. And Garrett ends up betting like 150 into 100 on the river. And Wesley thinks for like minutes before he finally puts in the call and then chides Garrett for overplaying a set of 4s.
Huh.
This is like back when Garrett was playing. So it was a few years ago. Oh, yeah. But the fact that he was thinking that way leads me to think, and yet he calls so quickly with aces here, that this is very much a Francisco dependent play. It feels like.
Yeah, does feel like it.
Yeah.
Cool.
Very cool. Music is my sunlight, and all I need is one mic. And I can show every single MC how it's done right. Every time I come by, I'm bound to leave them tongue-tied. I'm sipping on liquor, a quitter is what I'm not. We got one life, and I took a minor break, but I'm back to claim the throne. I'm gonna be traveling the globe. We still have time to make it.